let us pray and welcome to Australia. We thank you for bringing safe all the seasonal workers from the Kingdom of Tonga. We thank you and the people of Australia. We know this will help the poor people and the people who are in the development country, and particularly the Kingdom of Tonga. We ask this through our Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.
A small group of Tongans say a prayer after arriving at Sydney Airport. They have come to Australia under a new scheme to help Australian farmers and their own Pacific Island communities. It is in response to a severe shortage of seasonal workers in Australia, a shortage the National Farmers Federation says is costing fruit and vegetable growers millions of dollars a year in rotting produce. The handful of Tongans are part of an army of casual workers competing for the thousands of picking jobs the Farmers Federation says are going begging. Backpackers, students and unemployed workers are heading to the major growing areas, along with illegal workers and carpetbaggers. Immigration Minister Chris Evans says the government is trying to crack down on the increasing use of illegal workers.
I'm the first to admit that until you actually deal with the companies that are supplying the illegal labour, you're not going to successfully disrupt what's going on. We need to attack the culture that says it's okay to employ illegal labour. We need to target those employers who are not doing the right thing. And we do need to tackle the labour hire companies who become quite sophisticated in the use of illegal labour.
It's not just illegal labour that is giving the industry a bad name. There are lots of complaints about the treatment of legal workers, such as backpackers on working holiday visas, who say they're being mistreated and ripped off. In December last year, 24-year-old German backpacker Jessica Pira died while picking tomatoes near Bundaberg in Queensland. The Bundaberg coroner is still investigating the circumstances of her death and whether she died from dehydration or heat exhaustion. Stories of what's happening on some farms and in regional towns have spread quickly through the backpacker community.
Coming here really showed me a completely different side of how people would treat foreigners and backpackers being really taken advantage of. And when you're stuck in a town that's so far away from everything, and when you've got no money to pay rent, you can't get out of this town, so it's a vicious cycle.
The experience of Canadian traveller Pip Meisner is shared by many other working holiday makers who are turning up on the promise of abundant work, only to find the promises are often empty and their money is going into the pockets of opportunist middlemen. Hello, I'm Brendan King and this is Background Briefing on ABC Radio National. A few weeks ago, the National Farmers Federation put out a paper with a dramatic headline.
Labour pains cramp recovery as 100,000 jobs go begging.
The NFF paper said 80,000 of those are unfilled skilled jobs in the agriculture industry. The rest are picking jobs. The paper goes on to say
22,000 fruit picking positions are going begging in horticulture, costing horticultural farms an average $100,000 a year each in unpicked rotting fruit. In the most extreme cases, horticulture farmers are losing $250,000 per season in rotting produce due to the inability to find labour.
But one of the organisations set up to deal with this perceived shortage of labour is questioning the NFF's figures.
Hello, you've reached the National Harvest Labour Information Service. Please note that before commencing work, you will be required to provide appropriate documentation and identification to allow employers to check that you have the entitlement to work in Australia.
The National Harvest Labour Information Service, or Harvest Line, is a free, federally funded referral service that puts workers into jobs during harvest time. When someone rings the hotline looking for work and there's a job listed, Harvest Line transfers the call directly to the grower. The manager of Harvest Line is Robert Cameron. He says it's a mystery to him where the NFF came up with such high numbers needed for picking fruit.
I honestly don't know. I don't know where they've got their figures from or how old these figures are. All I can say is that we certainly haven't come across that.
The Harvest Line claims to be able to fill any job within minutes, and they're not seeing the demand for picking jobs the NFF says exists. Minister for Immigration and Citizenship Chris Evans says there definitely is a shortage, although it ebbs and flows with economic conditions, and sometimes the figures can be blown out of proportion.
Some of the reporting I don't don't think is accurate. People make claims about the numbers needed that are often, you know, maybe a little extravagant. But there's no doubt in recent years we have had shortages and people have struggled to find labour. Certainly last year we had a few issues because the labour market tightened and there was more competition for work. But the year before, when the economy was booming, of course, we had people, you know, looking for more working holiday makers than they could find. It does tend to be a bit driven by the economy, and we'd expect demand to pick up this year.
Immigration Minister Chris Evans. Background Briefing has found that in many places it's a case of too many workers and not enough work. Stephen Burt from Northern Ireland has a familiar story about finding himself in an expensive trap when he didn't get the work promised to him by a backpacker hostel owner in the border town of Mildura.
First week, as soon as I got there, I paid $220 for cutlery and keys, and the conditions weren't all that good.
That's what you had to pay to stay?
Yeah. Rent was $140, and you have to pay deposits for everything.
And what about when you did work? Did you get much work?
No. I was off for 3 months. I couldn't pay rent for 10 weeks, so I just had to wait.
And what were you promised before you went?
There's plenty of work. Come on up. And you just get screwed.
Backpacker Stephen Burt. There are several visa provisions that allow holiday makers to work temporarily in Australia, and this has meant that more backpackers and tourists are going to parts of Australia that are not on the well-worn tourist track in order to find work. The global financial crisis is also a factor. More visitors are choosing to come here for a working holiday because the Australian economy stood up comparatively well. This is Nick McClellan from the Institute of Social Research at Swinburne University.
In 2008-2009, for example, there were 39,000 Koreans, more than 39,000 who came under one of these work and holiday schemes. That's a serious number of people, and not all of those are lying on the beach at Bondi. So there's a lot of anecdotal evidence that the spike of unemployment in the Northern Hemisphere in 2008-2009 related to the global financial crisis has meant a surge of people coming to Australia.
There is now a steady flow of backpackers and overseas students arriving in regional towns during harvest. And under the rules for working holiday visas, travellers can stay in Australia for a second year if they work for at least 88 days during their first year in a specified rural or regional area. This is another measure aimed at boosting the seasonal labour force, and the most obvious and plentiful seasonal work is picking. Dr. Jeff Jarvis from the National Centre for Australian Studies at Monash University has been researching the backpacker market since the early 1990s and says the 88-day rule has attracted lots of travellers to regional growing centres like Bundaberg, Bowen and Mildura.
And what this did is actually drove the working holiday makers away from typically the coastal routes and the urban centres of, say, Sydney and Melbourne, into destinations that particularly hadn't seen a lot of travellers or a lot of international tourists before, on the backpacker side, such as places like Mildura. So all of a sudden we had a backpacker industry mushrooming up around the town.
Jeff Jarvis says the influx of working tourists has ensured a rapid growth in parts of the horticulture industry.
We're doing some fairly pioneering research in this field at Monash, and what we've really identified is, like any industry that grows very quickly, and in fact in the latest figures we got for 2007, 2008, 2009, it had about a 21% growth rate. Now, what that's meant is that there has been some grey activity, so to speak.
With travellers seeking to cash in on the promise of well-paid short-term work, others are cashing in on them. For example, hostels have sprung up, offering a place to stay that is tied to the promise of work. Jeff Jarvis says they're not always legitimate.
Certainly we've identified a number of illegal hostels operating, basically trying to take advantage of the travellers. Now, the classic example would be promising work in a destination, but to get that work you have to stay at a certain hostel. Now, these hostels are generally illegal operations, and they may actually not come through. They might promise the work, and they say, right, no, just wait 2 or 3 weeks before the work will come through, and in that time the backpackers are spending all their money.
The picking industry has also attracted labour hire contractors who act as middlemen, hiring and firing workers on behalf of growers. Some of these contractors employ overseas students and illegal workers, which Jeff Jarvis says is undercutting the traditional backpacker market.
previously where the farmer was very keen to hire local backpackers either through the harvest line or through the local hostel. Case studies we found of contractors turning up on the doorstep saying, I've got 20 workers in the bus, we want to start tomorrow, we'll pick your crop for this amount of money. Now, what that does is that it takes away labour from the backpacker market. And this backpacker or the working holidaymaker market is worth about $2 billion a year to Australia. And that market could be in jeopardy if a lot of the backpackers in regional Australia can't get these jobs.
Dr. Jeff Jarvis from the National Centre for Australian Studies at Monash University. For decades, travellers have had a variety of experiences, good and bad, picking fruit and doing other seasonal work around Australia. And there is good money to be made in some places. Background Briefing went to Mildura to find out what was happening. This is an area reliant on seasonal labour, and it is where many backpackers' complaints have stemmed from. It was the end of April. The picking season for stone fruit and grapes was over. There were a few figs left, and the picking season was starting for oranges and other citrus fruits. I went to the website of one of the hostels in the centre of town, Victoria's Borderline Backpackers. The website said,
Welcome to Victoria's Borderline Backpackers, where excellent accommodation, good work and great wages go hand in hand. The majority of our work is highly paid. The earnings per hour is terrific. All work is 8 hours plus. People make great money at our hostel.
On its website, Borderline offers a variety of work: picking, pruning, weeding, stacking, factory work, hospitality, and much, much more. It describes the accommodation as having
all the comforts of your own home, with room to move, drink, eat, and sleep. All rooms are spacious and no one is jammed in. Ideal for working travellers.
Victoria's Borderline Backpackers is on a busy roundabout in Mildura, just near the bridge over the River Murray. I checked in with the promise of work from owner Vicky Ayres. One of the first people I spoke to at the Borderline Hostel was Canadian traveller Pip Meisner. Before coming to Mildura, he said he'd also been promised work by Vicky Ayres.
Over the phone with Vicky, she told me that I was pretty much guaranteed work right away and that things looked pretty promising, so I came up right away as soon as I heard that.
And what was the experience once you did get here?
It was interesting. I spent the day settling in, doing groceries, getting myself ready. And then I started to meet the people as they came home from work. And they started to tell me about what work was actually like.
Pip Meisner said most of the other travellers at the Borderline Hostel had come to Mildura after Vicky promised them constant work on farms, only to find it was just 1 or 2 days' work at a time.
People I met had Vicky tell them numerous times, oh, in a week there's work, in a week there's work, and they would stay another week, 2 weeks, and sure enough there was no work, and this was a constant basis for people picking up casual jobs for a couple of days, and then 2 weeks with nothing, then another day, then another week without anything as well.
Pip Meisner said he'd been in Australia for 7 months, and he'd had a good time overall, but his experience in Mildura showed him a darker side of Australia. He said the weekly rent of $135 didn't include a clean and tidy environment.
There is no day-to-day running of a hostel. I feel very much like I'm back living with a slum house back in college or university, just rented out a house and that's all there is. The owner, Vicky, she only comes over when she wants to yell at you. I have yet to see her come in and clean. And it's a pretty depressing place. That's why I'm leaving tomorrow.
In the short time I stayed there, it was obvious the place hadn't been cleaned regularly. There were bits of glass in the carpet, as well as dirt and vegetation that had been walked through. Any cleaning was done by the residents. Pip Meisner left the Borderline Hostel the day after he spoke to Background Briefing. He'd managed to make his own arrangements to work on a nearby farm. After hearing the accounts of Pip Meisner and other residents of the hostel and reading some of the very negative reviews of the Borderline Hostel on the international website hostels.com, I asked the owner, Vicky Ayres, to respond to the criticisms.
I don't know if you're aware that there are certain websites that say that your establishment is less than up to scratch. Some people say it's the worst backpackers ever.
Well, it's like anything. You can't please 100% of the time all the people. It's part of life. We're not always happy with everything. But we do try, but the thing is our first priority at this given point is make sure that they're in work.
What about when you promise people work but they come here and there's no work? How do you respond to people saying that work was promised to them, but then when they get here they don't have any work and they've spent all their money on rent, on the initial fees, and then have to wait around weeks by which time they've spent all their money on the rent and looking for work?
Well, we've got three people out of work, but if the farmer can't use them, even though he needed them, and because of weather situation, our hands are tied. So what we tend to do is, like as this morning, I mean, I had three young ones out of work. So what I've done is nothing but knock on people's doors and ring and do my utmost.
But if seasons are maybe coming to an end and farmers know that, are you in contact with farmers every day to find out that maybe all their fruit's been picked, all their figs have been picked, the orange season's maybe delayed for another couple of weeks? Are you in contact so you then can know where some of your guests may be with work?
Basically, fruit picking, until the season's really started, it's like a lucky dip.
Do you tell people that on the phone? Because I've understood that you promise people work while they're on the phone, before they come, and then they come here not knowing that it's a lucky dip.
We only do what we're asked to do. That's all we do. If a farmer lets us know that they've got work, then that's what we do. We try and bring people in for that.
But there are backpackers over the road now that came here and were promised work.
Yes.
Straight away.
Yes, and they were taken to the farmer this morning, and we've had cold weather, which then affects the fruit, so he can't use them. But the weather as today, now it's starting to fine up. So if it stays like this, within the next few days, I'll get a phone call saying, yes, we'll need them now.
But there's no fruit at the farm.
I don't know. All I know is fruit needs still to be picked.
Vicky Ayres, owner of Victoria's Borderline Backpacker Hostel in Mildura. The farm we were talking about is a nearby fig farm. That was where the work had been arranged for me. And I knew there was almost no fruit to be picked, having already spent a frustrating and almost fruitless day there.
I'm standing here in the paddock of a fig orchard, and I'm up to about my second tray of figs. I think it's taken me an hour maybe to pick the first lot, maybe 45 minutes. And at $4 a tray, I better get moving. But interesting, I've turned up here, and some of the people that I've been staying with at the backpackers who are also working here say they're getting picking 13 trays over the last couple of days. I think one of the major problems is that there's not much fruit on any of the trees, so it's taking longer to get a whole tray of figs because there just isn't the fruit around. The rate of pay for a tray of figs doesn't go up when there's less fruit, and you have to do a lot more looking and a lot more walking.
After 5 hours of walking around in search of figs, we're sent home.
After working half a day, not much fruit around, not much figs, we've been asked to leave just due to the fact that there's not enough work. And I think I picked a total of 7 boxes. The other girls that are at the backpackers with me picked about the same. So 7 times 4 is $28 for about 5 hours we work. So that's about a bit over $5 an hour. 5 to 6. Not very good. Not very happy.
The tail end of a picking season, in this case the season for picking figs, is when you're likely to earn the least. Piece rates are common in the horticulture industry, with pay based on the amount of fruit harvested, which in turn depends on how much fruit there is to pick and how quickly the picker works. Pickers are paid by the bucket or tray, but piece rates don't take into account weather conditions or the beginning and end of seasons. At the end of the picking season, if there isn't other work around, it would be very difficult to earn enough to pay the rent. And what angered many of the people I met in Mildura is that they say they were promised plenty of work at good rates of pay. Background Briefing put the backpackers' complaints to the Immigration Minister, Chris Evans.
Well, I don't have a lot of information on that sort of practice, but I am concerned to make sure that backpackers or those on working holidays are paid appropriate award rates and conditions and they're not exploited. And I do think we've seen instances of labour hire companies acting inappropriately and not necessarily meeting fair wages and conditions, and I'm very, very determined to try and help stamp that out.
Senator Chris Evans. Hostel owner Vicky Ayres questions the work ethic of a lot of the working holiday makers that come through Mildura. She says she's noticed a difference since the introduction of the 88-day rule, which allows them to stay on for a second year if they do 88 days work in a rural or regional area like Mildura.
With that second year visa, we're getting a lot of turnover in backpackers in the sense that they're not cut out to do farm work at all, but they're trying to do that in order to score an extra year. So they go to great lengths in order to stay.
What do you mean, great lengths?
Well, normally they would not have... If there was alternative work to get your second year work visa, like your restaurants and things like that, well, they'd target them before they target working out in the field where it's hot and sunny. Where prior to the second year work visa, we used to get a lot of backpackers that would apply for jobs and they were more suited.
Because they knew what they were in for. They didn't have to come to Mildura to get that second year or come to a regional area?
No, they didn't have to. And so therefore they'd come out and we didn't have such a turnover in backpackers.
Vicky Ayres, the owner of Victoria's Borderline Backpackers Hostel in Mildura. Background Briefing has learnt from a number of backpackers that there is a rort around the second year visa provisions. That some working holiday makers have found farmers who, for an agreed fee, will sign off that they have done the 88 days required to get a second year visa. The Immigration Minister, Chris Evans, acknowledges the problem.
The interest in the second visa has grown in a very rapid way in recent years. And so we have had some concerns recently about the integrity of those measures, that if they make claims for a second visa, that they've actually done that work in regional areas that is the legislative requirement for that. And so I put in place an investigation into that integrity, and initial reports are that there have been serious concerns about that. So we're instituting new measures to try and ensure that there's no fraudulent activity in applying for the second working holiday visa.
Immigration Minister Chris Evans. On ABC Radio National, this is Background Briefing, a program looking at the $9.5 billion horticulture industry, where a lack of regulation and a desperate need for seasonal workers has caused a rush to the farm gates and some unpleasant experiences. The demand for labour has given rise to a range of contractors, many of them acting as middlemen, hiring and firing workers on behalf of growers, and many of them are operating outside the law. Some of these contractors pay very low rates and employ illegal workers, which has attracted the attention of the Immigration Department. Background Briefing went to Sale in eastern Victoria in the week that 13 illegal workers were detained in a raid by immigration officials. Sale is a growing horticultural area, and contractors are renting homes to house workers for the three major vegetable farms in the region. Sam Beachy is the pastoral organiser with the Victorian branch of the Australian Workers' Union.
It's pretty hard to get information. A lot of these people are coming out here as legitimate holiday people on their holiday visas, but they're being picked up in Melbourne and then floated straight down here into the Gippsland region and charged exorbitant rents in houses around Sale and Maffra and Bryglong and those places. It's unfortunate that they don't know their rights, they don't know what rates of pay they should be getting, and that's to the detriment of the whole of the industry, because if you've got farmers that are out there employing labour under the horticultural award, well then they're being severely disadvantaged by these fly-by-night contractors.
Sam Beachy says he's been told the workers are forbidden from having contact with local residents.
Reports I've had is that the workers aren't allowed to assimilate with any locals, say in Sale or in the Sale area. They have to keep to themselves. They're picked up in these combi vans with blacked out windows in the early hours of the morning, then they're delivered back in the late afternoons, and you know they're scattered right throughout Sale, which is a pretty terrible thing.
Sam Beachy, pastoral organiser with the Australian Workers' Union. Background Briefing came across an example of what Sam Beachy was talking about. I was told by a couple of people in the local community about the story of Lucy Liu, a Taiwanese visitor on a working holiday visa. After making just $100 a week picking strawberries, Lucy Liu got a job sorting beans near Stratford. She was hired by a contractor working for the Mulgawi Farming Company, which employs more than 400 workers on properties in Victoria and Queensland. Lucy's job came with live-in accommodation, for which she paid $125 a week. Lucy told me that when she arrived, she was shocked by the living conditions. We have revoiced Lucy for reasons of clarity.
The house is very dirty and it's very old. The kitchen is out of the house and the building and very dirty.
The house was very dirty and very old. The kitchen was out of the house in another building and very dirty. There were spider webs everywhere and lots of flies in the house all day.
Were other people that were living in the house unhappy with the way things were as well?
They didn't say nothing because they want to get a job. And
they didn't say anything because they wanted a job. They said the contractor told them, if you want to work here, it's difficult to find a house close by. So we were advised to live here.
Lucy says there were 52 workers living on two properties. On her first day, she was promised work, but it was called off, so she attempted to walk into town 8 kilometres away. Clearly lost, Lucy came across a local resident who offered help. They struck up a conversation. A couple of days later, the local resident, who was asked to be known only as Michelle, got a phone call from Lucy, who sounded distressed.
She rang me with an air of concern in her voice that there was people coming to inspect the home the next day and that she needed to find somewhere to go. They were told that they needed to get out for the day.
Who was coming to inspect the property?
Well, I believe that it would have been the Immigration Department. I am assuming it was the Immigration Department because she said it was workers there that were possibly illegal.
Did she say they were illegal?
Some, she said, yes.
Lucy says on that day, one of the supervisors told them to pack up fast.
He told everyone, say, we have to pack everyone's luggage.
He told everyone to pack up all their luggage. It was like an emergency. We were all very busy, as we had to pack everything up. They cleaned the cabin like an emergency and then put the entire luggage in it to hide it.
But what about immigration? Did you see them or you didn't get to see them?
I didn't see them because some people go to walking. I didn't walk.
Right.
I didn't see them. Some of the others went to work, but I didn't, because we were told we had to go out. My friend took me to the library and then to her house.
So where were the illegal workers when immigration came?
Oh, they work in the Mogoy as well.
They were working at Malgawi's.
Neither Lucy or Michelle could confirm immigration officials had come to check the property. We asked the department if they could confirm or deny that such an inspection took place. The emailed response said,
generally speaking, we don't discuss operational plans. It would defeat the purpose of compliance operations.
Another local family also befriended Lucy. One night, Lucy stayed at their house until after dark, so one of the sons, who wants to be known only as Andrew, gave her a lift back to the property.
I offered to give her a lift home. And got confronted down there and seemed pretty agitated by me being down there and didn't really like it.
So you got confronted on your way driving down the driveway?
Yeah, driving down the driveway about halfway down. He pulled me up and asked me what I was doing and why I was down here.
And what did you say?
I just said I was just dropping Lucy home, just a mate.
And then what did he do?
I drove off and he just done a U-turn and followed me back to the house, parked right behind me and then watched me go out the gateway.
And that was the last time Andrew saw Lucy.
A couple of days later, no one was home, but Lucy left a note on the door saying that she'd been fired for me driving her home and for Lucy telling everyone about it and what's down there.
Did you get the impression that people weren't supposed to know about that or go in there ever?
Yeah, when I dropped her home, after that man confronted us, she said, "You're not meant to know about him. We're meant to keep it all a secret."
Lucy says on the night Andrew gave her a lift home, a contractor was also at the property. When she went inside, the contractor asked who it was that dropped her off.
He asked me who is him. Right. And I said, oh, he's just neighbours. He said, why he here? I said, because it's too dark. He just gave me a lift to home. That's all.
He asked me, who is he? I said, it's just a neighbour. Why is he here? I said, because it's dark, so he gave me a lift home, that's all. He said, you know, I have a good idea for you. You can move out with your friend because I fire you. Just for this, I lost my job. That was the only reason. I didn't do anything wrong in my job.
I didn't do anything wrong with my job.
Lucy Liu then went to Melbourne. Background Briefing spoke to one of the owners of the Mulgawi Farming Company and put directly to him the allegations about illegal workers and the immigration inspection, the number of workers living at the property, along with the cleanliness of the accommodation, the workers not being allowed to contact locals, and the way in which Lucy was fired by the contractor. He declined the offer of an interview, saying only that it was the first he'd heard of any of it, and that Lucy should have told Mulgawi's owners about the way she'd been treated. Over the river from the Mulgawi property is another vegetable farm owned by the Ruffo brothers. They have lettuce farms in both Bacchus Marsh, west of Melbourne, and Boysdale, near Sale. At the end of last year, they were awarded the NAB Agribusiness Primary Producer of the Year Award. In August 2009, the Department of Immigration detained 22 workers living in the Boysdale area. 18 of those detained were deported. I took a drive past the Ruffo family property at Boysdale and stopped by the main road where workers were picking salad greens. After taking some photos of the scene, I was waved over by one of the workers. Then a car drove up from within the property. It was the owner, Frank Ruffo. After an introduction, I asked whether there were any illegal workers on the property.
I've got no objection to anyone coming on the property.
Sure.
But you've got to do the right protocol.
Yeah, no worries.
You haven't got a safety vest, you haven't signed in.
Okay.
And we're not aware of who's on the property if you get hurt. Who's your next of kin?
Yep, sure. Okay. Are you happy to have a chat to me about the hiring of illegal workers on your property that has been alleged to you
no
in the past?
There's no illegal workers on this property.
Have you had problems with that in the past?
No, not on this property.
Right. But on some of your other properties?
No.
Right.
The new wave of labour hire contractors are generally blamed for hiring illegal workers, but the spokesman for the Department of Immigration and Citizenship, Sandy Logan, says the grower has a responsibility to make sure their business is abiding by the law and not using illegal workers.
Let's not forget, there would not be an illegal worker if there was not an employer willing to engage them and exploit them. So this really starts with the employers who create a workplace or a workplace environment that is conducive to tolerating illegal workers.
Sandy Logan from the Department of Immigration and Citizenship. The manager of Harvest Line, Robert Cameron, says many of the farmers would know that illegal workers are on their farms.
Certainly, depending on what arrangements they've made with the contractor, if they've made arrangements with the contractor that are below what they would normally do if they were employing an Australian at the correct rate, then they're very aware of that things are not right and that they should be either terminating the contract with the contractor or ensuring that they look at the books to make sure that what's happening out there is correct.
Robert Cameron says Harvest Line is receiving a growing number of complaints about contractors promising and then not delivering work and proper pay.
There's certainly a growing number of contractors out there that are doing the wrong thing. They're certainly underpaying workers, promising them a lot of things and not delivering. Now, whether that's a problem that the growers need to address, because at the end of the day, they're the ones that are going to miss out and are not going to be able to get workers, because people will stop, certainly backpackers will stop coming to Australia if they keep to be ripped off.
National Harvest Line Manager Robert Cameron. The international nature of the backpackers community guarantees that word is getting out around the world. John Catus is a councillor with the Swan Hill Shire near Mildura, and he says angry backpackers put up a banner at Heathrow Airport in London telling other travellers to steer clear of fruit-picking jobs at Robin Vale in the Swan Hill Shire. John Catus.
There was a placard outside Heathrow Airport that said, don't go to Robin because you don't get paid the right wages.
You saw the photo of it?
Yes, there was a photograph that was brought back by locals that went to London. I believe that was done by backpackers, young people. One or two people done the wrong thing and they got paid the wrong wages and they got a bit upset.
Swan Hill Shire Councillor John Catus. Irishman Peter Doody runs several hostels in the Mildura area and says backpackers are coming to him with stories of poor treatment. He says with so many bad experiences, it's not just Mildura's reputation that's suffering, it's Australia's reputation.
Well, anecdotally and on peer websites, we do see people making negative comments about Mildura as a whole, not just about their experience in the hostel. So you'd have to think that the very bad experience that they have had has impacted considerably on Mildura as a region, and certainly from some of the comments on Australia as a destination.
Peter Doody says backpackers deserve to be better looked after.
Well, there's always room for improvement in every industry, and I believe the industry locally here hasn't done enough to make sure that the standards and the treatment of the international traveller is at an acceptable level. There are plenty of hostels in Mildura that have good reputations and, you know, they're honest and they've got integrity. There are other hostels and illegal houses that don't share the same ethos, and, you know, that is an issue for us.
And Peter Doody urges backpackers to do their research before jumping on the bus to regional areas with the promise of work.
There is lots of things that their fellow travellers write on the internet, on blogs, on peer websites and stuff, that provide them information about destinations and individual locations. So some of the places that you see talked about in the media, they're actually featured on these various websites, and that information is, if it's open for me, it's open for the traveller. So the traveller does have an important part to play in that. You can't perpetuate these things. They need to do their research.
Mildura hostel operator Peter Doody. Taiwanese tourist Felicia Lee says she was under no illusions about what to expect while in Australia on a working holiday visa. She and a friend did research before heading off on their travels, and it served them well.
Before we come here, we hear about a lot of the good side or bad side from internet, from the backpacker. They just go back from Australia and go back to Taiwan. They just tell us, if you come to Australia, you need to prepare yourself to suffer. Because here, maybe you work in a farm, the equipment is not really good, the environment is not really good, and the salary is not really good. It's not an easy way, because many backpackers here and many people, but not so many jobs here. So they just try to cut down the salary. But if you don't want to do this, you leave.
But if it's a working holiday maker, where is the holiday when all you're doing is working to survive?
We think this is not a holiday, because in the farm and just try to survival. Yes, in Australia, this not holiday. If you want to have some holiday, maybe, this is not easy to find a good job here.
Taiwanese traveller Felicia Lee. Jeff Jarvis from Monash University says travellers coming to Australia on working holiday visas shouldn't be underestimated. They may appear young and unskilled in terms of this type of work, but many will go on to hold significant positions in their own countries.
I think certainly we need to look at this market and realise that it's highly valuable. The working holiday makers aren't silly people. These guys are university educated. They're going to be the leaders of future society in 20, 30 years' time. And they're out here for an experience of Australia. And we want that experience to be positive, because they're going to tell their friends. They're going to become the ambassadors for Australia.
The backpacker industry is worth about $3 billion a year. The rapid growth of contractors, many with questionable work practices, has changed some long-standing employment arrangements where many growers used to hire local backpackers year after year. Now those jobs are being handled by contractors. In an effort to curb the use of illegal workers, the Howard government introduced new legislation in 2007, which allowed for heavy fines for companies and labour hire contractors found to be employing illegal workers. There are a number of cases currently before the courts, but despite several hundred illegal workers being deported each year, so far no company or contractor has been fined under the legislation. The Immigration Minister, Chris Evans, says the Employer Sanctions Act is flawed and the Rudd government is looking at making further changes.
The Act didn't give us the capacity to successfully prosecute employers. There hasn't been a successful prosecution. So I've got an independent legal expert to have a look at the Act, have a look at what's worked in other countries, have a look at what's worked in terms of other Australian legislation, to see if we can't bring in some amendments which will allow us to successfully deal with the people who persistently employ illegal workers. Being able to prosecute employers, being able to prosecute labour hire companies is part of a comprehensive response, not just catching illegal labour and deporting them, because there are others who will replace them.
So we can see more raids from immigration in the future?
More raids, but also more intelligent use of information. But as I say, we need to attack the culture that says it's okay to employ illegal labour. We need to target those employers who are not doing the right thing.
Immigration Minister Chris Evans. Many in the industry are calling for more regulation, but few growers are opting to employ workers under formal programs like the Pacific Scheme or through the federally funded Harvest Line. Nick McClellan from Swinburne University says the Pacific Scheme should be a starting point for a more regulated industry, as was the case in New Zealand.
When New Zealand brought in its recognised seasonal employer scheme, one of the aims was to clean up the industry. Growers, employers, government sat together with the unions and said, this is an industry that's had very poor workplace relations. It's had a casualised mobile force that's often paid under the table, thereby avoiding tax responsibilities. To have a regulated scheme means that reasonable employers can recruit from overseas without breaking the law in terms of working conditions, wages, occupational health and safety. And that's theoretically one of the advantages of a regulated temporary worker scheme. That just hasn't got off the ground yet in Australia. But there's a premium to be paid to run a regulated scheme like this. And growers over the last year have essentially voted with their feet. The fact that in 2009, the whole of the calendar year, only 56 workers arrived shows that this pilot really hasn't got off the ground.
In New Zealand, a similar scheme is attracting up to 5,000 workers from Pacific nations each year. One of the reasons it's been so successful is because New Zealand growers were ready to clean up the industry. Nick McClellan believes one of the big problems with the Australian version is the lack of expectation, which reads as a lack of commitment from the government and groups like the National Farmers Federation.
The government, when it announced the seasonal workers pilot for Australia, said that they would issue 2,500 visas over 3 years. That's about 800 a year on average after the first year. Now, New Zealand has a cap of 5,000 a year, a much more ambitious target, and in the first year of RSE, they got over nearly 4,000 workers. So we're talking about 800 a year. New Zealand's talking about many, many times more that. It's not a very ambitious program.
Nick McClellan from Swinburne University. The National Farmers Federation's claim that tens of thousands of jobs are going begging suggests Australia needs an ambitious program. Last month, an NFF study argued there are 100,000 unfilled jobs in the agriculture sector, including 22,000 jobs for fruit and vegetable pickers. It said some farmers are losing $250,000 a year in rotting produce. As we've heard, the NFF figures have surprised many in or observing the industry. Bill Mitchell is Professor of Economics and Director of the Centre of Full Employment and Equity at the University of Newcastle, and he specialises in regional employment statistics.
Overall, Australia, I don't think we have got a shortage of labour. I mean, the facts tell us that we've got more than 1.2 million people without enough work. 600,000 of them haven't got any work. There was a call for these external sources of labour. They haven't been tapping those. And at their very doorstep, they've got hundreds of thousands of workers who could ideally be working in their industries if they were willing to pay the correct conditions and wages.
Bill Mitchell from the University of Newcastle. If the predictions of the National Farmers Federation are correct, it is especially disappointing for the government-funded National Harvest Line, which offers to connect farmers with workers, but isn't being widely used by farmers, despite the efforts of Robert Cameron.
We certainly have far more people looking for work than work available, and we can fill any job that's given to us by growers within minutes, so there's that many people out there looking for work. We're actually out all the time talking to growers and encouraging them to use the service, but still there's only be a small percentage use the service at the moment.
Harvest Line Manager Robert Cameron. So what is the basis for the NFF claim that farmers are losing on average $100,000 worth of rotting fruit each year because there's no one to pick it? The NFF General Manager for Workplace Relations, Danita Warne, acknowledges the demand for workers' ebbs and flows, and their research dates from before the recent economic downturn. However, she says the demand will return.
There's no doubt that there are areas of production where there is fruit withering on the vine. It has not been as intense as it was a number of years ago when that research was first undertaken. But nevertheless, there are pockets that have identified continued labour shortages, but the NFF paper is looking towards the future, and there's certainly no doubt where we've had water shortages, there hasn't been a large demand for workers, and that has been reflected in the small number of Pacific Island workers that have been selected in the last 12 months. However, we are predicting that production will return to normal levels over the next 12 months to 5 years, and during that time, we will see an upturn again of the labour shortages that we were experiencing about 5 years ago.
Denita Warren, General Manager of Workplace Relations for the National Farmers Federation. For Pacific Island workers who are desperate for jobs, the hope is that a rapid rise in the demand for labour will see their employment scheme grow. The Immigration Minister, Chris Evans, says the demand for workers under the Pacific Island scheme hasn't lived up to expectations for a number of reasons, including the recent economic downturn and the increased use of illegal and lowly paid workers.
I think it's a bit more expensive for farmers than some of them had thought it would be, and that the last year in particular, the first year of the scheme, there was a lot of backpacker labour available. It'll be interesting to see how the trial develops as we get more experience, but also when we return to tighter labour market conditions. And one of the things I'm very focused on is that we do have this illegal labour problem that hasn't been effectively tackled, and we're going to tackle that. And that may well also have an impact on the Pacific Islander scheme, if you like, if one of the competing labour sources is illegal labour and we're able to much better manage and clamp down on that.
Minister for Immigration, Chris Evans. For the 20 or 30 Tongans who arrived in Australia last month, a job under the Pacific Island Workers Scheme has great significance. It is a source of income and an opportunity to impress. For father of three, Tukave Mwala, it is the first time he has left Tonga.
One of the most important things for me to participate in this program is to have funds to support the financial hardship for my family. But secondly, is to make sure that I'm doing the right thing and work hard and be the benchmark of this group to make sure that we open the door for the rest of our people in Tonga in the future.
Background Briefing's coordinating producer is Linda McGuinness. Technical production, John Jacobs. Research, Anna Whitfeld. The executive producer is Chris Bullock. I'm Brendan King, and you're listening to ABC Radio National.